Congratulations! You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast. We're doing a little different today. Oh, with Kate Rhodes.
And Mason Wazwaz.
We're doing it a little bit different today because we're on the road.
On the road again.
We're out here at SF MoMA right now recording this, and then we're going to hop on BART, run over to Oakland, do an interview. We haven't even done the interview that's going to be in this episode yet.
Sure haven't. It's going to be a real exciting experience for everyone involved. You okay?
Yeah.
You know how Mason,
I'm very upset about this. Last week was very hard and painful. Any good news? Give us the best news of the week.
The best news of the week. We went to a pretty exciting performance.
Oh, yeah, duh. Okay.
On Sunday.
Fuck. Good. That's good news.
That was great.
So we went to a great performance Sunday night, Blank Map. Oh, you got your, nice.
I'm glad you could remember
this. With Brontez Purnell.
Kayon Gaskin, Tasha Sayon,
A.D. Robertson,
and Wizard Apprentice.
The program that they give you, each dancer, each performer, artist, musician, has their kind of statement, their personal statement about the piece.
Right. There's information about them as an artist or as a performer, and then there's a statement about the work, and it's very critical.
Some of them are really intense because when we interviewed Brontez and Keith Hennessy, they talked about this piece and talked about how basically Keith Hennessy got a grant to make some kind of work. I don't know if he really gave us the full wording of what he said in all his grant proposals, but it says right in the beginning, all the foundations, they got a fucking Zellerbach, supported by Zellerbach, and fucking
Arts
all the
Commission.
Other NPR people. Wait, there Doris Duke and all the
Andrew Mellon Foundation. That's a big one.
Yeah. So anyhow, Keith Hennessy basically went and got all this money. It's I'm basically doing a project about blackness. I don't know if he said it was about that, with black dancers.
Yeah.
And so most of the responses talk about that, how even before the dance and the performance part were actually conceived, it was already a project about white privilege and this white guy getting this money. And so one of the...
I actually really appreciated the sort of
yeah, that they
just the transparency of that
it.
Sort of thinking and conversations around what that means. And
and
there are definitely
Kayon Gaskin straight up says in his statement, if I was asked to do this today, because they started work on this project 2 years ago, and he's if asked to do something like this today, I would most likely decline.
Yeah.
And I thought that was
sort of based on where he is in his sort of arts career is what it sounded like.
Yeah, that he has a different relationship to access.
It's interesting.
And of course, Brontez Purnell's statement was characteristically hilarious.
Yes.
Because he's I trusted Keith with this because it was going to bring up a lot of questions, and I totally fucking love feelings, heart. So wait, let me set the stage.
Yeah.
Ooh. So the stage was divided basically, I felt, into thirds. One third had a projection on the back wall, a projector on the floor projecting onto the back wall, basically a blue rectangle for most of it.
Most of the time,
and then a little bit of video, but I couldn't tell if it was pre-recorded video or it's coming from a live feed somewhere. And then the middle of the stage had a giant, probably 2.5 or 3 foot diameter googly eyes made out of wood or something with a big pupil.
Yeah. On the stage and on the wall
so
behind it.
So there were a bunch of those, a 3x3?
Yeah.
3 rows by 3
wide
columns or whatever.
And
then also on the wall.
On the wall. And then there was also the table with
where the music was. The synthesizers and stuff. And then on the last third was a big a fabric sewn, kind of quilty
It reminded
fabric
me of Keith
piece.
Haring.
Yeah, kind of, just because of the line thickness of some of the
and
lines.
The colors
it was red and gold.
And the drum kit.
And the drum kit was
on
in
that
the
list.
Back. And there was a strong kind of color of red on one side, blue on the other. Mm-hmm. And then the middle of the lighting would kind of change what that was. It was like green at points. And the music was like sometimes very ethereal. And then when you got the drum kit in, there was like sometimes just rhythm, just drum kit going. And then they'd bring back in the synthesizer.
There was voice. There were vocals in there.
Yep. And a lot of very free form kind of dance and some like what I thought looked a little contact improv-y, especially when like a couple dancers would be kind of leaning
touching
on each
one
other.
Another.
Uh-huh. And
there was some tap dancing?
Yes.
At one
with
moment?
A one shoe only.
Was it?
One tap shoe.
Oh,
I think
shoot,
and the
I didn't
other
notice
shoe
that.
Was sock footed. I think so. And then the tap dancer and the drummer would do a call and response where the tap dancer would do a beat or whatever, and then the drummer would try to kind of copy it. It was really funny because Brontez was on the drums and he's always like a total ham.
Yeah.
Loved it. There were some parts that we had a little more structure,
mm-hmm.
and I probably like those parts better because I'm just not.
It gave you something to
kind of
chew
literate.
On a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not mm-hmm. like contemporary dance literate. So, mm-hmm. like, and
then they kind of closed it with they sort of closed the performance with a series of. Like group poses, it sort of reminded me of like a TV.
Yeah, the end of a sitcom.
The end of a sitcom,
of all freeze.
Yeah, and the music was very much like sitcom-y or like game show almost.
Yeah.
And the way the lights are kind of like circling around the space, and then they would stop and they'd all freeze and with these very sarcastic or like exaggerated face, like facial expressions.
Mm-hmm. And they did one after another, and every one I was like, this is the last one, and we clap.
Yeah.
And then there were more and more and more.
Yeah.
And that was funny.
That was funny, but then it also made me feel awkward. Not me personally, but like, what is this relationship of like, this sort of forced kind
yeah,
of
like here
posturing?
We are.
Here we are in the lights as a group making
like
these like
hilarious.
Poses for you, like entertaining you.
Uh-huh. And the eyeballs also were like
yeah.
the turning around the gaze of the
yeah,
audience.
Yeah, definitely.
So there was a lot going on.
Yeah.
A lot of, with looking.
And there were definitely other moments where other people were nude as well or like partially
oh, yeah.
nude.
There was one point in the show where all the performers are
oh, yeah.
bare, like
chested.
Topless.
Yeah, topless.
And with their backs to the audience.
Yeah.
And then they all like slowly
yeah.
re-put their tops on.
I thought that was pretty intense.
Too.
You know?
And no one turned away for lack of funds.
Oh, really?
Sliding scale, yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
So, overall, loved it. 10 out of 10. Hopefully they can tour it, right?
Like, well, I'm curious to know, because I think in some of the writing I read, it was sort of interesting. I feel like someone said, I'm not sure if the five of us would have gotten together.
If not for this particular project.
So, right. It's sort of interesting to see what happens. Like
If
they'll want to work together more, if they'll want to tour it or apply to festivals or... It's just
yeah,
interesting how, like, you know, people get kind of almost forced together and it works or sometimes doesn't work, or maybe two of them will go off and do something together. Or,
yeah. And plus,
collaborations. Our constant intrigue around collaborations.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah. Anyhow, each of the five artists are formidable in their own right.
Right.
So even if it doesn't tour, we'll be sure to see more from all of them.
We'll put a link in the underworld.
Yes. Please call in 419-351-6606. My voicemail works again, or you can text that number. You can email us congratulationspinetree@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at Pine Tree Podcast. We're out here in Oakland, California, talking to artist, poet, would you even separate those two things? Maybe, maybe not. Indira Allegra. I read an interview that you did in Art Practical, I think it was, where I don't know why I'm starting with this question, but I've been thinking about it a lot. And you said one of your influences was Trickster Rabbit Tales, mm-hmm. and I was wondering if you could expand on that.
Oh, sure. So Trickster Rabbit comes out of a couple different points of my own background. So I think many people are familiar with the Brer Rabbit tale. So Brer Rabbit gets into shenanigans with usually men, typically white cis men who are in power in a plantation type environment. Mm-hmm. and figures out how to escape being ate up for dinner, whatever the case may be. Also, because my family is from I was born in Detroit, but they're from the South. There's also Cherokee rabbit tails as well. So we call them Chistu, or Chistu means rabbit, who is also a trickster as well and has the ability to kind of, again, find a window or a door where a window or a door isn't immediately apparent and sneak out. And so I feel like that's a part of my, part of my inheritance in terms of skills to live with, so.
That's very interesting, and because the thing that struck me most about your work that was in Take This Hammer was the marrying of queer craft and video, digital video, and that is a very something you would never expect.
Yeah, I think there's a way in which tricksters or folks from embodying multiple backgrounds, we're kind of always moving between spaces and maybe seeing connections where other people don't see connections. And we also thrive on ambiguity sometimes and slipperiness in order to maybe ask the questions or do the work that we need to do. So yeah, I love rabbit, and I learn a lot from the natural world, actually.
I'm just trying to think about how to segue into the work at Take This Hammer. Oh,
you can be abrupt.
Kate and I talked about the show on a couple episodes back, and your work really felt very present and very active, activated as work. Not that other work didn't, but it almost felt some of the work in the show felt more documentation.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that it may feel more present, as you say, or there's kind of a temporal difference that's happening with the work, is I'm using the visual language of our news feeds, that we are getting all this traumatic information on a daily basis, it seems, on my news feed anyway. And if it's Facebook, if it's Twitter, even now I'm still stunned, by what has happened in Orlando. Mm-hmm. Not because I expect that gun violence will stop anytime soon, but just the act of going into a sanctuary, which I consider queer spaces to be sanctuaries, mm-hmm. Is just, it's almost unthinkable, but and yet not. In terms of thinking about, let me back up. I think it was important to me to figure out a way to use that action of scrolling and scanning mm-hmm. as material itself. And I know that when I'm working on the loom and I'm laying down weft thread, so weft runs left to right, warp runs up and down. Yeah, it became clear to me that there were just some obvious similarities between the motion of my eye, this act of reading the material, this act of narration. And in fact, when we use the word textile, we're actually invoking, or when we use the word text, we're invoking the word texere, which means to weave. It's a Latin verb. So storytelling or narration or writing and cloth making have been co-conspirators for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And I think we borrow from the architecture of weaving to actually know how to tell story, mm-hmm. which is why we still can't get away from scrolling up and down or scrolling left to right, that to me is not an arbitrary choice. There are many different ways that one can come across information, but yet there's such a strong synergy or similarity to the process of weaving, which also takes time. And I appreciate it when folks are willing to be with the installation for more than just a moment or two. I think that as someone who has a predilection for craft processes, there's almost a different temporal agreement that I have to make with the practice in and of itself to weave something, because mm-hmm. it takes so long. Mm-hmm. It's not quite the same as working in Adobe Creative Suite, where you can just kind of click and something will hopefully happen if if your computer's not too old or whatever, as the case may be. Yeah, I think that it's really important to me to think about hybridizing technologies. Mm-hmm. I think of weaving as a technology.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting when you say that, because it makes me think of, weaving as a language. And I immediately thought of there's different rugs from all over the world that have different patterns that talk about a specific group of people or a specific area of the world, or... my my father is Palestinian, and the kaffiyeh has different colors and different patterns mm-hmm. to describe a different tribe or group of people mm-hmm. or in indigenous cultures in like South America, there's all these different colors and patterns. It's like, it is a language. Like you're yeah. talking about a group of people or yeah. a story. It's nice to sort of like reflect on this older tradition that mm-hmm. I sometimes forget is still like influencing us all the time.
All the time.
Wow. Yeah.
All the time. Human beings don't move that fast. You know, right. like honestly, yeah. we think we do because yeah. we can come up with like cool new things. But in terms of how we process information, I'm really kind of suspicious of the fact that we're like zooming light years ahead into right. something, you know, totally yeah. new. I'm like, I'm not entirely sure that that's the deal. In the creation of Blackout, it was important to me to actually take a look at the uniforms that police officers use when they're walking the beat. Now, obviously, there are many different types of fabrics that are used by police departments. And if they're particularly officers that we see like in riot gear, when there's chemical weapons that may be involved, that's a totally different thing. But when walking the beat, I thought it's always been eerie to me that despite the exertion of an officer intimidating or beating someone, and this comes from my own experience of seeing that, and then also, of course, like everyone else, seeing footage, too much footage online, you know, that the crease in their pant leg always remains freshly pressed, you know? That's a strange thing. And so there's a way in which the cloth becomes complicit in this violence, and so I got curious about that. Mm. So I actually had to go... I did a lot of research on fabrics that were in use by police departments that we hear a lot about in the news. OPD, NYPD, LAPD, police departments in Ferguson, so on and so forth. And then I actually went to where the uniforms are issued for the Oakland Police Department here in Oakland. Thanks, Google.
That was easy.
Yeah, really. So it was a little strange walking in. I am obviously not a police officer, so they were kind of like, what are you doing here? But I was able to be able to get my hands on the fabric mm-hmm. and to verify that much of what is being worn is what weavers would call a serge twill or twill fabric. Mm-hmm. And we've all seen a twill fabric before because it's woven in such a way where there's like diagonal lines that are kind of running okay. through it, and it wears really nicely on the body. Mm-hmm. It also washes blood stains out easily, which is why it's a go-to for uniform. And
that's like planned in the process. I mean, it's just scary to me.
Yeah, there's a lot that's encoded in cloth when you really break it down. And so I think for me, having the training of a weaver, I'm able to kind of clue into that. And mm-hmm. I think about how was that coded? What is the structure behind it? Mm-hmm. And what is it saying or not saying? You know, and being able to break that down into its very kind of basic constituent parts, when you see the installation Blackout, you're surrounded by several screens that have these black and white grid patterns. Weavers call that a drawdown. So the white squares are places where the weft thread, remember the thread I was talking about that mm-hmm. runs left to right, is visible. The dark squares is where the warp thread is visible. So it's literally a way for weavers to plot out the structure of the cloth. When looking at that and studying that, it became apparent to me that the cloth itself was acting as a redactive device, mm-hmm. right? When trying to access these narratives of families who have lost loved ones to police violence. Yeah, so that's Blackout. And it's a way in which I feel like it's a hybridized technology. I'm really interested in thinking about this idea of digital mourning cloths and what mm-hmm. that means and how we might use them. And digital forms of mourning. I'll actually be leaving in 2 weeks to be on residency in Berlin to kind of explore mm. these ideas in more depth.
Right on. It makes me want someone to do a project where they make police uniforms in like the opposite cloth, or the cloth that doesn't that like is hard to get blood stains out of. Like, what happens if police departments around the world are faced with like either just the visual of mm-hmm. blood stain on their own bodies, mm-hmm. on their own clothes, but also like the expenses, like the more kind of like business side of it, like, oh, we're spending too much money on uniforms. Like, maybe we need to reevaluate how we're being. Like, how do you like force change? You know, it's right. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know if you would have to plain weave something, or that almost seems too simple. Would almost have to be my instinct. My queer instinct says that I want to go in and I want to, like, what if overnight everything there was like lavishly decorated? With
sequence.
Yeah, with outrageous patterns and kind of like very porous fabrics, where the skin is actually visible, how that would actually impact how the officer would feel in the cloth if it was woven as like a fishnet situation. But I'm, you know, that's just a queer fantasy.
Kind of like, I love it.
They're in the trap then. If it's like the fishnet, that makes me think of like they're then the fish in some ways.
Do you feel like being a poet helps or not with writing artist statements?
I think it means that I take a lot longer to make decisions about what the next line is going to be. So yes and no. I'm not a very I'm not a fast writer. Yeah, I'm just not. I'm thinking about like, you know, is this word working hard enough? And most people don't think that way. They just write a statement or they just write the grant proposal or whatever. And in fact, when writing grant proposals, that stuff, like the poetic stuff, can like actually like get in the way, you know, like folks just want to know what you're doing, who's involved, what are the outcomes, you know, stuff there, like that.
It's so opposite, you know. So opposite. It's just like if your brain has to think in a completely different way to write that stuff.
It's kind of painful. Because I'm like, but do you see the beauty of the... And they're like, nope, we don't. We just like your rationale, please. So
like, can you be more to the point?
Exactly, you know, so it's yeah, I don't know. It depends on what kind of text I'm trying to write and what my... how close my deadline is, if it's helpful or not. I think my artist statement is like 2 or 3 sentences, honestly. That was like, at most, that was all I could deal with, actually. I was like, I can't handle it. It's just, I don't know, 3 sentences, that's it.
You're like, I'm done.
I'm done, you know, and hopefully the text is doing enough work to get people interested in asking more questions about the work, so.
Were those 3 sentences, 5 syllables, 7 syllables, and 5 syllables? That's my poetry joke.
Good one.
I would have done that if it would have made sense conceptually with my body of work, but that would not have been a conceptually sound choice. But I do appreciate your thinking around it.
Thank you. Yes.
Different moments I want to write on like a post-it, and sometimes I want to write on like a slightly larger post-it, or it's weird, it's very bizarre.
Do you have a go-to paper size?
Can you? I really, this is a good question though. I like the notebooks, the Moleskines, the not that size. I do have that
size.
Next
size up?
The next size up. Yeah. What you should do, can you put your post-its in the Moleskin so that they're organized? In such
sure,
a way?
I probably could.
I mean, you don't have
I
to
can
do
try
this.
It out.
You could try it. I mean, I just, I'm so, I'm like, oh.
You're like filled with dread.
Yeah, it's just text of all different sizes
like
just
them,
floating
I
around.
Put them in
folders, like folders that make sense.
I use post-its too.
Yeah.
I do. Sometimes I use post-its of different sizes, but I put them in the notebook. This is ridiculous. But I went on a, like a meditation retreat like a few years ago, and it was the first silent retreat, like. You sit in silence, you walk in silence, you eat in silence, you work in silence. Whatever, it was like, I mean, it was good, but it was a lot of silence. Mm-hmm. And anyway, the instructor was like, or the teacher was like, yeah, so you're not really reading or writing while you're out here. And I was like, what? I'm out here for 10 days and I'm not reading or writing because I have to just like be present with my thoughts. And I was like, so I talked to her and I was like, kind of pulled her aside and I was like, speaking very softly, and I was like, yeah, so I can do the not reading part. That's hard, but I, you know, I can do that. I don't know about the not writing. I was like, can we work something out? Yeah. You know? And she was like, I don't know why I felt like I had to like ask her for like permission. Yeah, I know. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't want to mess anything up or like, I don't know, whatever. And she was like, oh, okay, well, you know, just do it at the end of the day, like in your room, where it won't be like distracting other people.
Oh, mm-hmm.
But then I was fantasizing about the color of ink that I would use.
Wow.
All day long. So I'm sitting on my cushion.
I love
my
it.
Hips hurt. And I'm like, is it blue ink or black ink? Oh, but I brought the green pen. I brought a green pen. I could use that tonight. That's cool. That's cool. Oh, wait. I'm thinking. Okay. Never mind. You know, like it's really.
I love it.
So I really connected with the impulse to write as a physical one, not just like a intellectual need, mm-hmm. but like, yeah, like it's a really like kinetic mm-hmm. desire to actually scratch something out. You know,
I also have a green pen that I love.
Oh, okay. It's so good, right? Like, I just feel
there's
like
moments when you need to write with a
different color. And
yes.
That's what I'm saying about it. It's like, for me, it's also with reading.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start a book because I've heard it was great or like the author. But yeah. I'm just, if I'm not feeling it, I'm literally not feeling it. And I have to put it down and find the book on the shelf. That's the one that's responding to me in the moment that mm-hmm. I can actually get into and read.
Yeah.
I have like, I'm thinking right now, I think I have five different books by my bedside sure. right now, and so I don't watch, like, I don't have a TV or whatever. Who has a TV anymore? But so it's literally kind of like whatever channel my brain is on.
Do you care to share what those five books are?
Oh yeah, sure. Well, Rumi is always by my bedside. Nice. I figure like that's a good one. I need some poetic support. And I just finished a beautiful book, actually, called The Sovereignty of Quiet. And it's by Kevin Quashie, and it has a lot to do with... there's a lot of attention paid to Black expressiveness through fashion, through voice, through volume, through aesthetics, whatever. Mm-hmm. Not as much attention paid to the inner life, mm-hmm. Or just that Black folks have an inner life, and you know, and sort of looking at iconic images, you know, like the men at the Olympics in Mexico City with the Black Power salute and whatnot, and rather than only reading those, that an image like that through the lens of resistance, reading it through also the lens of quiet and wondering about the mm-hmm. inner life of someone who, with his head bowed and his eyes closed, also has his fist in the air. And it becomes, it's a poetic act. It's a moment of beauty, really. But Black bodies are not often read through the lens of softness and quiet mm-hmm. and interiority. So that's what that's about. Highly recommended. What else do I have by the bed right now? The latest copy of the New Asterix magazine. I have a coloring book that...
I love it. So great.
Yeah. This is like really weird. It's like so intimate. It's like, what's by my bedside? Oh my God. I have a coloring book that a friend of a friend gave to me after... Well, I'm recovering from surgery, which is why I'm kind of loopy for this interview. But it's all about kind of like shaping your narrative when you've had surgery done, you know, particularly around like your ovaries and your uterus and all those good places. And then I have a book that's called, I think it's called The Book of Lists or things like that. So it basically, sometimes list making is actually really soothing for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's
me too.
Okay, good. Yeah. I know it seems really strange, but it's really soothing. And so all the prompts are different, and it's like, list all the concerts you've been to, or list all of the best kissers in your life. And, you know, it's just kind of like fun things to kind of get you off the normal tracks that you may write about in your own, like, journal or something like mm-hmm. that, to write about something else. And actually, sometimes there are other stories that kind of emerge from those lists for me, so they actually show up yeah. in my work, but you would never know
wow.
that it started with yeah. a silly list making book. So
I love that. We do have our final, always final question, which is
always final question.
Yeah.
What is that?
I love it. You're like me. I mean, I do this weird thing too where I just like sing things. I did this earlier today. I don't know.
I think
whatever.
It's because it kind of looks this thing that you have on the Zoom recorder is just so fuzzy. It kind of invokes this kind of playful response. But if you had like a brick or something on top,
oh God,
that would invoke like a very different type of interview. But we should try it as a form of performance art.
Is there anything else that you would like listeners to know?
Stay tuned for more hybrid technologies and for more time-based experiences. I'm active on like Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, so that's the best way to kind of keep track of what's going on. And there's always stuff going on. So I'll have a show in Berlin and then bring the exhibition back.
Oh, good.
Cool.
And I'll be presenting at the Textile Society of America conference in October. I'll be on a panel that's thinking a lot about life at the port. So what it means to make textiles, and we think about that broadly, they're waiting for an encounter with like language or an encounter with gesture or an encounter with even like special forces. Mm-hmm. And so that it's less about arriving someplace, but more about like waiting for that encounter. Yeah, I think it'll be a really fruitful discussion.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us today. And as always, congratulations.
Congrats, Pine Tree.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. I hope to hear from you. All apologies to Margaret Tedesco and everyone that hates when we talk over each other.
But we like to.
It's compulsive. Anyhow, from the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been
Congratulations, Pine Tree.
Everybody, I just wanted to do one big plug at the end for the music in this episode, which is by Vane Hane. This is all from their new album, Gag Order, and you know Vane Hane from Daddy's Plastic, Persian Daddy's Plastic, also in Take This Hammer at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. So I put a link to Vane Hane's Bandcamp where you can buy the album in the underworld. That is Vane Hane. vainhein.bandcamp.com. That is the pluggiest plug ever, but I really like this album, so check it out.